Chapter 2. Simplest way in the world. I puffed a volume into his face. "See, you like it," said I, so coolly that the men and I do believe the horses burst out laughing. He started back choking almost, and recovered himself only to vent such a storm of oaths and curses that I was compelled to request Captain Rodden, the captain on duty, to take note of his lordship's words, and unluckily could not help adding a question which settled my business. "Who were good enough," I said, "to ask me, my lord, from what blackguard I got my pipe? Might I ask from what blackguard you learned your language?" This was quite enough. Had I said, "From what gentleman did your lordship learn your language?" the point would have been quite as good, and my lord Martingale would have suffered in my place. As it was, I was so strongly recommended to sell out by His Royal Highness the Commander-in-Chief, that, being of a good-natured disposition, never knowing how to refuse a friend, I at once threw up my hopes of military distinction, and retired into civil life. My lord was kind enough to meet me afterwards in a field in the Glanmore Road, where he put a ball into my leg. This I returned to him some years later with about 23 others black ones, when he came to be balloted for at a club, of which I have the honor to be a member. Thus, by the indulgence of a simple and harmless propensity, of a propensity which can inflict an injury upon no person or thing except the coat, and the person of him who indulges in it, of a custom honored and observed in almost all the nations of the world, of a custom which, far from leading a man into any wickedness or dissipation to which youth is subject, on the contrary, begets only benevolent silence and thoughtful good-humored observation, I found at the age of 20 all my prospects in life destroyed. I cared not for women in those days. The calm smoker has a sweet companion in his pipe. I did not drink immoderately of wine, for though a friend to trifling potations, to excessively strong drinks tobacco is abhorrent. I never thought of gambling, for the lover of the pipe has no need of such excitement, but I was considered a monster of dissipation in my family, and bade fair to come to ruin. "Look at George," my mother-in-law said to the genteel and correct young Flintskinners. "He entered the world with every prospect in life, and see in what an abyss of degradation his fatal habits have plunged him. At school he was flogged and disgraced, he was disgraced and rusticated at the university, he was disgraced and expelled from the army. He might have had the living of Boodle, her ladyship gave it to one of her nephews, but he would not take his degree. His papa would have purchased him a troop, nay, a lieutenant colonelcy someday, but for his fatal excesses. And now, as long as my dear husband will listen to the voice of a wife who adores him, never, never shall he spend a shilling upon so worthless a young man. He has a small income from his mother. I cannot but think that the first Lady Fitzpoodle was a weak and misguided person. Let him live upon his mean pittance as he can, and I heartily pray we may not hear of him in Gaol. My brother, after he came to the estate, married the ninth daughter of our neighbor, Sir John Spreadeagle, and Boodle Hall has seen a new little Fitzpoodle with every succeeding spring. The dowager retired to Scotland with a large jointure and a wondrous heap of savings. Lady Fitz is a good creature, but she thinks me something diabolical, trembles when she sees me, and gathers all her children about her, rushes into the nursery whenever I pay that little seminary a visit, and actually slapped poor little Frank's ears one day when I was teaching him to ride upon the back of a Newfoundland dog. "George," said my brother to me the last time I paid him a visit at the old hall, "don't be angry, my dear fellow, but Maria is in a hum in a delicate situation, expecting her hum the 11th, and do you know you frighten her? It was but yesterday you met her in the rookery you were smoking, that enormous German pipe, and when she came in she had an hysterical seizure, and Drench says that in her situation it's dangerous. And I say, George, if you go to town you'll find a couple of hundred at your banker's." And with this the poor fellow shook me by the hand, and called for a fresh bottle of claret. Afterwards he told me, with many hesitations, that my room at Bootle Hall had been made into a second nursery. I see my sister-in-law in London twice or thrice in the season, and the little people, who have almost forgotten to call me Uncle George. It's hard to, for I am a lonely man after all, and my heart yearns to them. The other day I smuggled a couple of them into my chambers, and had a little feast of cream and strawberries to welcome them. But it had like to have cost the nursery maid, a Swiss girl, that Fitzboodle hired somewhere in his travels, her place. My stepmama, who happened to be in town, came flying down in her chariot, pounced upon the poor thing and the children in the midst of the entertainment, and when I asked her, with rather a bad grace to be sure, to take a chair and a share of the feast, Mr. Fitzboodle, said she, I am not accustomed to sit down in a place that smells of tobacco like an alehouse inhabited by a serpent, sir. A serpent. Do you understand me, who carries his poison into his brother's own house, and pursues his infamous designs before his brother's own children? Put on Miss Maria's bonnet this instant. Mamsel, entendez-vous? Medi labanie mamsel. And I shall take care, mamsel, that you return to Switzerland tomorrow. I've no doubt you are a relation of Courvoisier, owe. Owe. Courvoisier, vous comprenez, and you shall certainly be sent back to your friends. With this speech, and with the children and their maid sobbing before her, my lady retired. But for once my sister-in-law was on my side, not liking the meddlement of the elder lady. I know, then, that from indulging in that simple habit of smoking, I have gained among the ladies a dreadful reputation. I see that they look coolly upon me, and darkly at their husbands, when they arrive at home in my company. Men, I observe, in consequence, ask me to dine much oftener at the club, or the Tar and Garter at Richmond, or at Avegrove's, than in their own houses, and with this sort of arrangement I am fain to acquiesce. For, as I said before, I am of an easy temper, and can at any rate take my cigar case out after dinner at Blackwall, when my lady or the Duchess is not by. I know, of course, the best men in town. And as for ladies' society, not having it, for I will have none of your pseudo-ladies, such as sometimes honor bachelor's parties, actresses, couturiers, opera dancers, and so forth. As for ladies' society, I say, I cry pish. 'Tis not worth the trouble of the complimenting, and the bother of pumps and black silk stockings. Let any man remember what ladies' society was when he had an opportunity of seeing them among themselves, as what the Acalum does in the Thesmophoria.
I beg pardon, I was on the verge of a classical allusion, which I abominate.
I mean at that period of his life, when the intellect is pretty acute, though the body is small, namely, when a young gentleman is about 11 years of age, dining at his father's table during the holidays, and is requested by his papa to quit the dinner table when the ladies retire from it. Corbleu. I recollect their whole talk as well as if it had been whispered but yesterday, and can see, after a long dinner, the yellow summer sun throwing long shadows over the lawn before the dining room windows, and my poor mother and her company of ladies sailing away to the music room in old Bootle Hall. The Countess Dodley was the great lady in our county, a portly lady who used to love crimson satin in those days, and birds of paradise. She was flaxen-haired, and the regent once said she resembled one of King Charles's beauties. When Sir John Todcaster used to begin his famous story of the exciseman,
I shall not tell it here, for very good reasons, my poor mother used to turn to Lady Dodley, and give that mystic signal at which all females rise from their chairs.
Tufthand, the curate, would spring from his seat, and be sure to be the first to open the door for the retreating ladies. And my brother Tom and I, though remaining stoutly in our places, were speedily ejected from them by the governor's invariable remark, Tom, and George, if you have had quite enough of wine, you had better go and join your mama. Yonder she marches, heaven bless her.
Through the old oak hall, along the shadows of the antlers, are on the wainscot, and the armor of Rollo Fitzpoodle looks in the sunset, as if it were emblazoned with rubies. Yonder she marches, stately and tall, in her invariable pearl-colored tabinet, followed by Lady Dodley, blazing like a flamingo. Next comes Lady Emily Tufton. She was Lady Emily Flintskinner, who will not for all the world take precedence of rich, vulgar, kind, good-humored Mrs. Colonel Grogwater, as she would be called, with a yellow little husband from Madras, who first taught me to drink sangaree. He was a new arrival in our county, but paid nobly to the hounds, and occupied hospitably a house which was always famous for its hospitality. Civilly Hall, poor Bob Cullender ran through 7,000 a year, before he was 30 years old, once when I was a lad. Colonel Grogwater gave me 2 gold mohurs out of his desk for whist markers, and I'm sorry to say I ran up from Eton, and sold them both for 73 shillings at a shop in Cornhill. But to return to the ladies, who are all this, while kept waiting in the hall, and to their usual conversation after dinner. Can any man forget how miserably flat it was? 5 matrons sit on sofas, and talk in a subdued voice. First Lady, mysteriously, "Why, dear Lady Dodley, do tell me about poor Susan Tuckett." Second Lady, "LL 3 children are perfectly well, and I assure you as fine babies as I ever saw in my life. I made her give them Daffy's elixir the first day, and it was the greatest mercy that I had some of Frederick's baby clothes by me. For you know I had provided Susan with sets for one only, and really, Third Lady, of course one couldn't, and for my part I think your ladyship is a great deal too kind to these people. A little gardener's boy dressed in Lord Dodley's frocks indeed. I recollect that one at his christening had the sweetest lace in the world. Fourth Lady, how do you think of this, ma'am? Lady Emily, I mean? I have just had it from Powell and James. Gipier, they call it. Isn't it an odd name for lace? And they charge me, upon my conscience, 4 guineas a yard. Third Lady, why, mother, when she came to Flintskinner, had lace upon her robe that cost 60 guineas a yard, ma'am. 'Twas sent from Malins direct by our relation, the Count de Regnay. Fourth Lady, aside, thought she would not let the evening pass without talking of her Malins lace and her Count de Regnay. Odious people! They don't spare their backs, but they pinch their. Here Tom upsets a coffee cup over his white jean trousers, and another young gentleman bursts into a laugh, saying, by Jove, that's a good un. George, my dear, says Mama, had not you and your young friend better go into the garden? But mind, no fruit, or Dr. Glauber must be called in again immediately. And we all go, and in 10 minutes I and my brother are fighting in the stables. If, instead of listening to the matrons and their discourse, we had taken the opportunity of attending to the conversation of the misses, we should have heard matter not a whit more interesting. First Miss, hey, we're all 3 in blue crepe. You never saw anything so odious. And I know for a certainty that they wore those dresses at Muddlebury, at the archery ball, and I dare say they had them in town. Second Miss, aunt, you think Jemima decidedly crooked? And those fair complexions, they freckle so, that really Miss Blanche ought to be called Miss Brown. Third Miss, he. Fourth Miss, aunt, you think Blanche is a pretty name? First Miss, eh? Do you think so, dear? Why, it's my second name. Second Miss, and I'm sure Captain Travers thinks it a beautiful name. Third Miss, he. Fourth Miss, what was he telling you at dinner that seemed to interest you so? First Miss, law, nothing. That is, yes. Charles, that is, Captain Travers, is a sweet poet, and was reciting to me some lines that he had composed upon a faded violet. The odor from the flower is gone, that like thy something, I forget what it was, but his lines are sweet, and so original too. I wish that horrid Sir John Todcaster had not begun his story of the exciseman, for Lady Fitzpoodle always quits the table when he begins. Third miss. Oh, you like those tufts that gentlemen wear sometimes on their chins? Second miss. Nonsense, Mary. Third miss. L, I only asked, Jane. Frank thinks, you know, that he shall very soon have one, and puts bear's grease on his chin every night. Second miss. Airy, nonsense. Third miss. L, only ask him. You know he came to our dressing room last night, and took the pomatum away, and he says that, when boys go to Oxford they always first miss. Heavens! Have you heard the news about the Lancers? Charles, that is, Captain Travers, told it me. Second miss. Ah! They won't go away before the ball, I hope. First miss. Oh, but on the 15th they are to shave their mustaches. He says that Lord Tufto is in a perfect fury about it. Second miss. And poor George Beardmore too. And see, here Tom upsets the coffee over his trousers, and the conversations end. I can recollect a dozen such, and ask any man of sense whether such talk amuses him. Try again to speak to a young lady while you are dancing what we call in this country a quadrille. What nonsense do you invariably give and receive in return? No, I am a woman scorner and don't care to own it. I hate young ladies. Have I not been in love with several, and has any one of them ever treated me decently? I hate married women. Do they not hate me? And, simply because I smoke, try to draw their husbands away from my society? I hate dowagers. Have I not cause? Does not every dowager in London point to George Fitzpoodle as to a dissolute wretch whom young and old should avoid? And yet do not imagine that I have not loved. I have, and madly, many, many times. I am but 38, not past the age of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.